Here a wet start. Some outbreaks of heavy rain, especially over the Pennines and southeast Scotland, but it will brighten up. Still with some heavy showers, but some sunshine into the afternoon. 18 degrees for Manchester, 19 in Edinburgh and Newcastle. And then through the weekend, much quieter weather, dry for most with some bright spells, breezier with some patchy rain across the north and west.
Thank you, Ben. And now on Radio 4, our Book of the Week. The Nobel laureate Seamus Heaney died last month. In this recording, he reads the fourth part of his translation of the epic Anglo-Saxon poem Beowulf. After a great struggle, Beowulf, hero of the Geats, has driven the evil monster Grendel fatally wounded under the fenbanks. The following morning, bands of retainers gallop to the mead hall where Beowulf waits to give the news to King Hrothgar.
When Hrothgar arrived at the hall, he spoke, standing on the steps, under the steep eaves, gazing at the roofwork and Grendel's talon. First and foremost, let the Almighty Father be thanked for this sight. I suffered a long harrowing by Grendel, but the heavenly shepherd can work his wonders always and everywhere. Not long since, it seemed I would never be granted the slightest solace or relief from any of my burdens. The best of houses glittered and reeked and ran with blood. This one worry outweighed all others, a constant distress to counsellors entrusted with defending the people's forts from assault by monsters and demons. But now a man with the Lord's assistance has accomplished something none of us could manage before now for all our efforts. Whoever she was who brought forth this flower of manhood, if she is still alive, that woman can say that in her labours the Lord of Ages bestowed a grace on her. So now, Beowulf, I adopt you in my heart as a dear son. Nourish and maintain this new connection, you noblest of men. There'll be nothing you'll want for, no worldly goods that won't be yours. I have often honoured smaller achievements, recognized warriors not nearly as worthy, lavished rewards on the less deserving. But you have made yourself immortal by your glorious action. May the God of Ages continue to keep and requite you well. Then Halfdane's son presented Beowulf with a gold standard as a victory gift, an embroidered banner, also breastmail and a helmet, and a sword carried high that was both precious object and token of honour. So Beowulf drank his drink at ease. It was hardly a shame to be showered with such gifts in front of the hall troops. There haven't been many moments, I am sure, when men exchanged four such treasures at so friendly a sitting. An embossed ridge, a band lapped with wire, arched over the helmet, head protection to keep the keen-honed cutting edge from damaging it when danger threatened and the man was battling behind his shield. Next, the king ordered 8 horses with gold bridles to be brought through the yard into the hall. The harness of one included a saddle of sumptuous design, the battle seat where the son of Halfdane rode when he wished to join the sword play. Wherever the killing and carnage were the worst, he would be to the fore, fighting hard. Then the Danish prince, descendant of Ing, handed over both the arms and the horses, urging Beowulf to use them well. And so their leader, the lord and guard of coffer and strongroom, with customary grace, bestowed upon Beowulf both sets of gifts. A fair witness can see how well each one behaved. The chieftain went on to reward the others. Each man on the bench who had sailed with Beowulf and risked the voyage received a bounty, some treasured possession. And compensation, a price in gold, was settled for the Geat Grendel had cruelly killed earlier, as he would have killed more, had not mindful God and one man's daring prevented that doom. Past and present, God's will prevails. Hence, understanding is always best and a prudent mind. whoever remains for long here in this earthly life will enjoy and endure more than enough. They sang then and played to please the hero, words and music for their warrior prince, harp tunes and tales of adventure. There were high times on the hall benches, and the king's poet performed his part with the saga of Finn and his sons, unfolding the tale of that fierce attack in Friesland, when Hnaf, king of the Danes, met death, and his sister Hildebur suffered cruelly. Son and brother, she lost them both on the battlefield. They foredoomed, cut down and spear-gored, she in shock, waylaid by grief, Hawk's daughter. How could she not lament her fate when morning came and the light broke on her murdered dears? And so farewell, delight on earth. War carried away Finn's troop of thanes, all but a few. How then could Finn hold the line or fight on to the end with Hengest? How save the rump of his force from that enemy chief? So a truce was offered as follows. First, separate quarters to be cleared for the Danes, hall and throne to be shared with the Frisians. Then, second, every day at the dole out of gifts, Finn, son of Folkwald, would honour the Danes, bestow with an even hand to Hengest and Hengest's men the wrought gold rings, bounty to match the measure he gave his own Frisians, to keep morale in the beer hall high. Both sides then sealed their agreement. With oaths to Hengest, Finn swore, openly, solemnly, that the battle survivors would be guaranteed honour and status. No infringement by word or deed, no provocation would be permitted. Their own ring-giver was dead and gone. They were leaderless, in forced allegiance to his murderer. A funeral pyre was then prepared, effulgent gold brought out from the hoard. The pride and prince of the Shieldings lay awaiting the flame. Everywhere there were blood-plastered coats of mail. The pyre was heaped with boar-shaped helmets forged in gold, with the gashed corpses of well-born Danes. Many had fallen. Then Hildebur ordered her own son's body to be burnt with Hnaf's, the flesh on his bones to sputter and blaze beside his uncle's. The woman wailed and sang keens. The warrior went up. Carcass flame swirled and fumed. They stood round the burial mound and howled as heads melted. Crusted gashes spattered and ran bloody matter. The glutton element flamed and consumed the dead of both sides. Their great days were gone. Warriors scattered to homes and forts all over Friesland. Fewer now, feeling loss of friends. Hengest stayed, lived out that whole resentful, blood-sullen winter with Finn, homesick and helpless. No ring-whirled prow could up then and away on the sea. Wind and water raged with storms. Wave and shingle were shackled in ice. Until another year appeared in the yard, as it does to this day, the seasons constant, the wonder of light coming over us. Then winter was gone. Earth's lap grew lovely. Longing woke in the cooped-up exile for a voyage home, but more for vengeance, some way of bringing things to a head. His sword arm hankered to greet the Dutes. Thus blood was spilled, the gallant Finn slain in his home. The wildness in them had to brim over. The hall ran red with blood of enemies. Finn was cut down, the queen brought away, and everything the Shieldings could find inside Finn's walls, the Frisian king's gold collars and gemstones, swept off to the ship. over sea lanes, then back to Daneland, the warrior troop bore that lady home. The poem was over. The poet had performed. A pleasant murmur started on the benches. Stewards did the rounds with wine and splendid jugs. The queen spoke to Hrothgar. "Enjoy this drink, most generous lord. Raise up your goblet, entertain the Geats duly and gently, discourse with them, be open-handed, happy and fond. Relish their company, but recollect as well all of the boons that have been bestowed on you. The bright court of Heorot has been cleansed, and now the word is that you want to adopt this warrior as a son. So, while you may, bask in your fortune, and then bequeath kingdom and nation to your kith and kin." She turned then to the bench where her boys sat, all the youth together, and that good man, Beowulf the Geat, sat between the brothers. The cup was carried to him, kind words spoken in welcome, and a wealth of gold given to the hero. 2 arm bangles, a mail shirt and rings, and the most resplendent torque of gold I ever heard tell of anywhere on earth or under heaven. Then the queen pronounced in the presence of the company, "Take delight in this torque, dear Beowulf. Wear it for luck, and wear also this mail from our people's armory. May you prosper in them. Be acclaimed for strength, for kindly guidance to these 2 boys, and your bounty will be sure. You have won renown. You are known to all men, far and near, now and forever. Your sway is wide as the wind's home, as the sea around cliffs. And so, my prince, I wish you a lifetime's luck and blessings to enjoy this treasure. Treat my sons with tender care. Be strong and kind. Here each comrade is true to the other, loyal to Lord, loving in spirit. The thanes have one purpose. The people are ready. Having drunk and pledged, the ranks do as I bid." She moved then to her place. Men were drinking wine at that rare feast. How could they know fate, the grim shape of things to come, the threat looming over many thanes as night approached and King Hrothgar prepared to retire to his quarters? Retainers in great numbers were posted on guard as so often in the past. Benches were pushed back, bedding gear and bolsters spread across the floor, and one man lay down to his rest, already marked for death. At their heads they placed their polished timber battle shields, and on the bench over them each man's kit was kept to hand, a towering war helmet, webbed mail shirt, and great shafted spear. It was their habit always and everywhere to be ready for action, at home or in the camp, in whatever case, and at whatever time the need arose to rally round their lord. They were a right people.
Seamus Heaney was reading from his translation of the great Anglo-Saxon poem Beowulf. The story continues in part 5, which you can hear at the same time tomorrow. Beowulf was produced in Salford by Susan Roberts. This is BBC Radio 4, and now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Friday the 4th of October. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, Forties, Fisher, German Bight, Biscay and Fair Isle. The general synopsis at 1800. Lows, East Seoul, 998, Rockall and Southeast Iceland, both 995, losing their identities. New low expected 250 miles northeast of Iceland, 987, by 1800 Friday. The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, northeast 40s. Southeasterly 6 to gale 8, occasionally severe gale 9, except in northeast 40s. Occasional rain, good, occasionally poor. Southwest 40s, Cromarty, Forth, Tyne, Dogger. Southerly or southeasterly 5 to 7, veering westerly.